Welcome to Music Majors Unplugged. Do you want to find your place in the world of music and succeed in a career? Do you find yourself up late at night thinking about what your next steps should be? Do you have ambitious goals but are unsure how to pursue them? Hello, my name is Aiden and I too was and still am a college student who wants to pursue music for a living but is unsure of what steps to take. I too feel overwhelmed with all of the things that I have tried to do to further my career and wished everything would just fall into place. I wanted to win a job, I wanted to be accepted into a summer festival, and I wanted to make a living in music, but I kept telling myself that I wasn't a strong enough player and that maybe music was not for me. I discovered that masterclasses were where I learned the best. Just listening and talking to professionals is the easiest way to learn about where you want to take your career in the future. In this podcast, you will learn about new career paths, listen to professionals that are working in the industry, and learn advice to take yourself to the next level so you can find your place in music. Hello and welcome back to Music Majors Unplugged. Today we have Dr. Eric Rohde. Dr. Eric Rohde maintains a diverse career as a conductor, violinist, and educator and has performed in recitals and festivals across the United States and Europe and Asia. He is the director of orchestral activities at the University of Northern Iowa, the music director of the Winona Symphony Orchestra, and the founding artistic director of the Solomon Chamber Orchestra, an orchestra dedicated to promoting the works of living composers and of Haydn and his contemporaries. Prior to his appointment at the University of Northern Iowa, Rohde served as the Director of String Activities and Orchestra at Indiana State University, where he conducted the Indiana State University Symphony Orchestra. Rohde holds a doctorate of musical arts in conducting from the University of Minnesota Twin Cities and degrees in violin performance and biomedical engineering. Today with Dr. Rohde, we're going to be talking about conducting and education and how those two things work together and kind of how students can see a future in both of those. So thank you for coming today.
It's my pleasure.
If you just kind of want to introduce yourself, talk about your background a little bit, how you came to where you are now.
Sure. Well, I mean, I always tell people there are no straight lines in this business. And so everybody's journey is very different, including mine. As you already said, my first degree was in engineering, which is unusual for what I do today. But I do actually use the training, because like engineering programs, as you can imagine, it's more about training in a way of thinking, a method of problem solving, especially. And so it's actually very applicable to what we do every day in rehearsal. But, I do have a music degree that I got alongside of that in violin. And then it was towards the end of that time that I kind of made the change to wanting to study conducting. And so I did both my master's and doctorate in conducting at University of Minnesota, and then was very happy when I graduated to get a job at Indiana State, and actually it was a joint position, both conducting and teaching violin, and I was there for 6 years, and then moved here, and I've been working at UNI ever since 2020.
Right, during COVID.
Yes.
What a great time to start. So what is, like when you think about prior to college, because obviously that's when you started really pursuing music, what is the thing that inspired you to take on music more than just a hobby?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, my parents enrolled me in violin lessons when I was 4. So I don't really remember a time when I wasn't making music in some way. And, you know, why did they do that? I think they chose to do that because they thought it was a good idea. The method that I was taught under is the Suzuki method, which at its core is actually about character development more than it is about making good musicians. And so I'm very grateful for that early training that I had. And just kind of being immersed in this world from a really young age. And, you know, I was probably in middle school when I sort of had a change of kind of how I thought about my own study of music, where it changed from something that my parents made me do to something that I actually wanted to do. And that was probably the first kind of important change that happened for me, is kind of taking ownership of this as something that I wanted. And then when I got to college, I mean, honestly, I declared a music major so that I could take violin lessons from a professor instead of a grad student, because I went to a big school if you're not an actual music major, the professors might not have room for you in their studio. I mean, that's not true everywhere, but it was where I went to school. So I declared a music major having no intentions of finishing it, actually. And then as I got into it, I really enjoyed the classes. I really enjoyed the coursework. And so it became evident early on that I wanted to finish the degree, but it wasn't till probably the end of my junior year that I decided, like, no, this is actually what I want to do.
And at that point, you had been taking, like, the coursework for biomedical engineering, and you just decided, well, I might as well finish this out as well.
Yeah, I was 3 years into the engineering degree, and, you know, probably 2 years or so into the music degree at that point because of how the classes were staggered. And, I mean, I was so close to finishing, like, you may as well get done. So it took me 5 years to do the 2 degrees as an undergrad, and I don't regret it at all. I mean, it was great training and super interesting, but not what I felt compelled to mm-hmm. pursue.
And so were your parents musicians?
A lot of members of my family, including my parents, are amateur musicians.
Okay.
And so my dad especially is very involved in music. He's an engineer. And so, you know, he had his 40-hour-a-week job, and then he would spend all of his time outside of work doing music. So, like, he directed church choirs for years. He plays piano a lot and still does. And, you know, but it was never a profession for anybody else. And so I feel very privileged to be the first generation of my family allowed to do something like this professionally.
Was that a scary decision to decide that, you know, even though you went and got this engineering degree, that you were going to pursue music instead?
Yeah, felt like a big risk. And when I told my parents, it was on my 21st birthday, I'll never forget it, that I wanted to be a musician, they were sort of stunned because their experience of being a musician was like doing it as a side gig.
Right.
You know, getting paid like a few hundred dollars a month to direct a choir, or like $100 to play a reception after a wedding. And for them, it was like, well, how are you going to live? Much less if you want to have a family or like support other people, like how are you going to do that? And it's just because no one knew. Right. I didn't know. And so, you know, there was a lot that I felt kind of unprepared for. Like I didn't know this world at all until very late. And but it's turned out okay.
I think so.
Yeah.
So you finish your undergraduate degree. What happens next to take you into the world of conducting? Or when did you start getting interested in that?
I did some conducting as a high schooler, actually.
Oh.
I was the like student conductor for both the high school choir I was in and an honors choir that I did. And so that was kind of my first taste of it. And then I didn't really do any conducting as an undergrad, but late in my time as an undergrad, actually during the 5 years I was there, we had 4 different orchestra conductors because the person who had been there for a while retired. And then there was an interim, and then I think there was a failed search. And so then there was another interim, and then the person who now is still there came. And so when he came, he really changed the orchestra. Like, my experience was really different, and he was really inspiring. He was very demanding. Mm-hmm. He made the orchestra sound better, but also I loved being in the orchestra in a different way than I had before. And so as I was thinking about kind of career paths and just my personal sort of skill set, it just felt like conducting would naturally fit my skill set better. And so I literally just like went to his office one day and was just sort of said, like, hey, I think I want to pursue conducting. Like, what should I do? And he barely knew me. I was in his orchestra for a year. And so he gave me some advice, you know, as far as just like, you know, put a group of musicians together and just try something, like just conduct something and see sort of what you can do. And I did that, and it was enough to get me into his master's program. So then that's when I really started. So I started my master's not really knowing very much, mm-hmm. but he saw enough potential in me and knew me enough as a musician that, you know, he gave me a chance. And I'm very grateful for that.
So your audition into the master's program was literally just putting together some musicians and being and just conducting, or?
Well, that was my application.
Okay.
So for the application, I had to put together a video of myself conducting and then the other standard stuff, my CV and, mm-hmm. you know, grades and all the transcripts. And then you're invited to audition in front of the whole orchestra. So
oh, so they just trial run?
Yeah.
Oh.
So we had, you know, it was like one day of auditions and there were other people who were auditioning for the doctoral program at the same time. And so it was like me in front of all of my peers, like conducting Schubert's Unfinished Symphony, first movement. And it was terrifying. It was so terrifying because all of these people knew me, you know. But I must not have been terrible.
Good enough to get into the program.
Let me in. So, yeah.
And was there, what was the reason for staying at the University of Minnesota instead of, for because all three of your degrees are
yeah,
from there.
Yeah, all four of my degrees are from there.
All right, yeah.
Right. You know, that's a great question. I chose to stay because, I mean, I went to the University of Minnesota as an undergrad. Because it was the one place in the area where I could pursue both degrees that I wanted to. And I really liked the school. But then when I made this change, this like it became the opportunity that I was offered, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't pursue auditioning at other schools because I didn't know any other conductors at any other schools in the area. And so when it came to doing an audition, I just sort of went for it there, and then I was offered a spot, and so I just took it. So I stayed because it was the opportunity available to me, but that was true because I didn't pursue anything else.
Right.
Which is I wouldn't necessarily advise that.
Yeah.
And I also wouldn't necessarily advise staying at the same school for all of your degrees because one of the things that is true about my education is that it wasn't as multifaceted in viewpoint as it could have been had I gone to other schools. Now, obviously, I have a really strong relationship with my teacher because I was with him for so long, mm-hmm. and I really believe in the things that he believes in and taught us. And so that's really valuable. Like, I didn't have to wade through a pedagogy that I didn't agree with. But knowing that that was true, I also did as much as I could to give myself other influences. And so probably the most important one I had when I was a student was a summer program that I did in Paris at the European American Musical Alliance. And the conducting teacher there, Mark Shapiro is his name, great, like a great teacher. And he was able to give me some things that were very different than my teacher at Minnesota and were really valuable because one of the things I believe in as a teacher and as a conductor is you need to really kind of be fully yourself. Like you have to be authentic to who you are as a person, as a musician, as a teacher, as a scholar. And like, I'm not the same person as any of my teachers. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I have been able to take things that work for me and feel like they are authentic to who I am from different people because I'm not the same as any one of them. And so I also, when I actually had my first job in Indiana, I played on a lot of orchestras for a lot of different conductors, many of whom are very different than my training. And that also was educational because I've stolen things from them too that are different ideas than what I had in school and I liked. So it you kind of like you're always learning, right? You're always right. Studying. And because my training was so kind of in one lane. And it was very good training. I'm very thankful for that training. And there's a lot of the skill set that I have now, which is because of that training, then I was able to add to. I deliberately made sure I added to it with other experiences.
That's awesome. And so when you're doing your graduate degree and your doctorate degree, what do like your classes look like, especially like geared towards conducting? Like, what do one-on-one lessons for conducting look like?
Well, conducting lessons are a little strange, right? So the core curriculum is very similar to other music degrees, right? You study history and theory, mm-hmm. and work on your core musicianship. But the actual conducting coursework, you have lessons, and those can look a lot of different ways. Like sometimes a conducting lesson looks like opening up a score together, sitting at a table just like this, and just talking about a piece of music. You know, how does Brahms treat the sonata form in the first movement of his second symphony? Well, it's not obvious, and there's choices you have to make. And so talking, like sometimes lessons are just talking. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like just doing kind of study together. Sometimes lessons are literally kind of working on your choreography, for lack of a better word. Like if you're studying a really complicated score by, say, Stravinsky, and it's full of mixed meter, there's a certain element of you having to like get your choreography of your baton figured out so mm-hmm. that the orchestra knows like what the heck is going on. And it's clear. And also, as a teacher, you know, like your teacher can see things that you might not be aware of. You know, like at this particular moment, why didn't you cue the trumpets? Right? I mean, we're just like conducting the, you know, the bookshelves in the room, right? But you kind of pretend. And it's like, well, maybe I wasn't thinking about the trumpets. And then I learned that, oh, actually, they haven't played yet and counted, you know, 75 measures of rest. Okay, well, it's probably important that I cue them, mm-hmm. you know, to make sure that they're there. And so there is some of that. Sometimes we play for each other. Like my teacher would play from the score at the piano. I do that for my students. And that's helpful because then when you're conducting, you're actually you're producing sound, right? Someone is reacting to your conducting and making sound. And right. that is, of course, what the real thing is. Truthfully, you can only learn conducting by standing in front of an ensemble and waving your arms. And so there is also a lot of, as much time as you can have doing that is really valuable. And that's also tricky because, of course, you have to have your lesson in front of 60 to 80 people who are also your peers. Mm-hmm. But it's important because that's the only way you learn. And so we would also do this for each other in like seminar classes. So all the conductors would be together in a seminar. And, you know, let's say we were studying some symphony or whatever. Our teacher would, you know, throw one of us on the podium and two of us would be sitting at the piano and we would play from the score for each other and then he can coach us. Or if we were doing an opera excerpt, you know, one or two of us is playing at the piano, someone is singing and someone is conducting. And like, none of us are pianists, none of us are singers, but when people are actually making the music based on your conducting, that's when you actually learn. So you have to try to create as many opportunities for that as you can. Mm-hmm.
And did your time and your degrees offer opportunity to play or to conduct like the orchestra, like the actual symphony? Or
yeah, sure, of course. I mean, so in the degree track, we would have one kind of capstone project with the actual orchestra. Mm. And it was usually something that we could choose in collaboration with our teacher. Besides that, at Minnesota is big enough that there are actually several non-major orchestras. And so those were ours to just, they were our ensemble. And our teacher would occasionally come to rehearsal if we asked him to, but otherwise it was just a lab for us. And there was a lot of learning that happened there because then your feedback is just how they play, right? Like if you give them a cue and they play with a certain sound that you think is not what you wanted, well, either you can tell them what you want or you can change something about your conducting to get the sound you want. So we did that. I spent hundreds of hours in the opera rehearsals doing, you know, assistant conducting there, conducting staging rehearsals, you know. So, I mean, we would just spend countless hours conducting there. And then when I was a student, we all did our own recitals also. And so I would recruit an orchestra of just like my colleagues and friends and like, you know, pay them in lunch someday, you know, like, cause I couldn't afford to pay them anything. Right. Like I would buy chocolate bars and like make tacos or something for everybody. But then I was able to do my own like full programs. And so like the first symphonies I conducted were that.
And were they full orchestras or like kind of?
I mean, smaller? They were like smallish full orchestras. Like I did kind of mostly classical era stuff.
Okay.
Because it was easier to recruit an orchestra of 30 than an orchestra of 60.
Right.
Right. So, but then when I got to conduct like the big orchestra, I did big pieces.
Right.
Because there's my chance.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of musicians in college kind of get a lot of their experience from gigging. Is there like a gigging scene for conductors, or did you gig on the side violin at all? Or,
I mean, I've always gigged on the side as a violinist. You know, it keeps me connected to the like player community as well. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to gig as a conductor, so to speak. Like you, at the beginning, you really have to create your own opportunities. And so like the Solomon Orchestra that I created, like that was just a pickup orchestra of like I raised the money for it and then just kind of put it together and we put on concerts. And you kind of have to do that stuff at the beginning because there's so many conductors out there and every orchestra only needs one,
mm-hmm.
right? And so there's not a lot of opportunities. And so at least my experience is that you have to kind of create them yourself. But of course, you learn a lot from that when it's like you're the only person who is hiring all the musicians and making sure we have a space to rehearse and a space for the concert and doing publicity and renting the music and, you know, setting up the chairs and stands. I mean, like when you do everything, you really learn a lot about what it takes to just put on a concert.
And so you finish your doctorate. What made you decide that you wanted to be a professor at a college?
Well, when I was towards the end of my doctorate, I literally applied for just about every job I thought I might possibly qualify for. So normally when you finish your studies, you apply, if you go kind of the professional track, you often apply for like assistant conductor positions with, you know, mid to large orchestras. And if you go that way, you're usually with an ensemble for, you know, several years and you just kind of shadow the main conductor and, you know, maybe you conduct children's concerts or pops concerts. Like you do some of the sort of ancillary stuff. The other thing that you are qualified to do is teach at a university. So once you have your doctorate, that's kind of the gateway to being qualified to teach at a university. And so I kind of applied for all sorts of things like that. I applied for opera companies, orchestras, for collegiate jobs, like a bunch of stuff. And Indiana State was the job I was offered. And so that's the one I took. Like I wasn't sure kind of what I wanted to do when I was applying. I was like, well, let's just see what sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And I got there and found that I loved teaching and that it fit me really well. And so it like I felt I was happy that I felt like I was able to fall into my niche really quickly.
Yeah.
And I didn't necessarily know that that was going to be the case, but it ended up being the case. And I'm really thankful for that.
Yeah. And you talk about creating kind of your own jobs or whatever. Mm-hmm. And obviously you said the big job is like being an assistant conductor for an orchestra and then possibly getting to be the conductor for an mm-hmm. orchestra. What does that audition process look like? Because for musicians, you know, you sit behind a curtain or a baffle or whatever and you play and then they go, okay, thank you. And then the next person comes in. But like,
right.
you can't do that with conducting. So what does that process entail?
Yeah, I mean, as an assistant conductor, again, the application is you send kind of videos of yourself and your CV, and then you would get invited to audition based on whether you meet kind of their minimum requirements. And what the actual audition looks like can be different place to place, but certainly it will include standing in front of a group of musicians from that orchestra and doing something. And usually it's a small ensemble. Like a really common repertoire would be Soldier's Tale by Stravinsky, because it's you kind of have to have chops to work through all the mixed meter and stuff. And often there's like multiple rounds. And so like, let's say the first round is Soldier's Tale, and it might be just that. It could be very short, you know, like you have 15 minutes and then you're either moving on or not. And then, and maybe you would audition in front of a larger group or the orchestra, but also maybe not. It just depends on each setup. There may be something else for you to do. There are some very common opera excerpts that show up on these things to see if you can work with singers. Again, if you can navigate that style of conducting. And then, you know, you might have an interview with the music director and or a committee of musicians. There may be some other kind of qualifying things that you do, like to demonstrate repertoire awareness or if you have keyboard skills and things like that. But it's mostly the conducting.
What are committees looking for to get you past that first round, just like the resume CV round?
I think they need to be able to see that you have studied your craft, right? That your technique is good, because like no one wants to try to follow a conductor who has terrible technique. But they're also looking for someone who is a musician. And so you need to have both. Like you have to work on your craft and your technique and that kind of just rudimentary physical logistics of what conducting means. But you also need to be a good musician and a compelling musician. And to be a conductor requires a lot of like a huge range of skills, right? Like you can't just be good with a baton. You can't just be a good musician. You also have to be a leader. You have to know how to speak to an orchestra. You have to know how to speak to an audience, right? You have to be good with not only musicians, but with soloists, maybe with a chorus, with singers, also with just patrons of the orchestra, with people who are like, you have to be good as a fundraiser. Like there are a lot of skills that are required to really be successful. And so, you know, committees are looking for people who are good at a lot of different things. And truthfully, different committees probably have different focuses depending on what the orchestra needs. And you just don't know that until you're kind of in the process and are, you know, being asked questions and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been on a committee?
Not to hire a conductor, but for orchestral musicians.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Because I would imagine that like, if the committee is full of different musicians from the ensemble, like everybody probably wants something different.
Yeah, and probably nobody on the committee is a conductor.
Right. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's easy to hire another, like third trumpet, because hopefully first trumpet is on the committee. And they're like, yeah, that's the person that's going to fit in my sound.
That's correct.
But you're talking about, you know, 10 people that all want something different from this one person.
Right. And all are bringing very different experiences to the table.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really interesting process.
So, so strange. But such is the world of music. Yes. All right. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you could take 30 seconds to follow us and share with a friend who also might find this information helpful, that would mean a lot. Follow us on social media. It means the world to know that this podcast is making a difference in your life. Keep practicing, performing, and learning. We'll be back soon with another episode.